autonomy has a meaningfully large effect on profits, value added, and sales. So we're talking about something along the lines of a 40% increase in value added over 10 years of the program, and about a 58% increase in profits over 10 years of the program.
Welcome to Vox Dev Talks. My name is Tim Phillips. Economics is focused a lot on how we should pay managers, but much less on how much we should let them manage. Well, if you want to succeed as a big boss, the business books will tell you, you have to delegate. But we know less than you think about the impact of delegation alone on productivity or profitability. Well, a natural experiment in India has encouraging news for all of you ambitious middle managers. Namrata Kala of MIT did the analysis and she joins me now. Welcome to Vox Dev Talks.
Thank you for having me.
I said we don't know much about the impact of delegation. Is this true? Why not?
Well, so we don't know as much about the impact of delegation independent of incentives. And the reason for that is largely twofold. The first is organizations don't sort of wake up one day and decide to change their organizational structure. And so changes to organizational structure are very endogenous. And the second is that when you're changing organizational structure, you often change incentives or ownership or other things in combination with the changes in organizational structure. And then a related point is that when you change the organizational structure, what you get in the short term might not be what you get in the long term. And so natural experiments that are able to find exogenous variation in organizational structure and estimate effects 10 years, 13 years later remain relatively scarce for these reasons.
In this natural experiment, you've been analysing the performance of state-owned enterprises in India, haven't you? So what sort of companies are we talking about here? And what's the decision-making structure pre-delegation, I suppose?
So you should think of these as large firms that operate in both manufacturing as well as, to some extent, the services sector. And so these range from firms in the textile sector, pharmaceuticals, financial services. We have a really broad range. And the data that I put together has data on the universe of all state-owned enterprises in which the central government of India has an ownership stake that's greater than 50%. So on average, they're actually more than 90% owned by the central government. There's even a travel agency, if you can believe that. So there's a really broad range of firms that we're talking about. And pre-delegation, the decision-making process is as follows. So the firm has a board of directors, much like private firms and firms that we sort of think intuitively about. However, each state-owned enterprise is housed under a ministry. And so think of the Coal India Limited being housed under the Ministry of Coal. And the decision-making structure is that if the board of directors of a state-owned enterprise want to undertake a big strategic decision, so putting up a plant, a capital expansion, major labor restructuring, a joint venture with a private firm perhaps, they have to request permission from a committee. And the size and complexity of the committee varies with the size and complexity of the decision that they're requesting permission for. So this could be a small committee with some people from the ministry itself, or a larger committee comprising of more higher up officials. And so you petition, you get permission, and this includes decisions for which you are not actually seeking government financing. So if you as an SOE have your own retained earnings or a private bank willing to lend you the money, you still need to go via the committee.
Gosh, so what changed in this experiment and who did it change for?
So in 1997, after a long-standing debate about how these firms could be made more productive, more efficient by reducing interference or giving them more autonomy, the government announces an earned autonomy program, which is a very common way of actually devolving autonomy in the public sector. And so the main pillar of this program is that if you are a firm that earns profits for 3 years running and have a positive net worth, you become eligible for autonomy. And so you can apply for this status. Once you get the status, you essentially no longer need to seek permission from the committee. But for decisions like capital expansion, where you have financing available, or for decisions like joint ventures and subsidiaries or labor restructuring, you just notify. So everything that was on the table before as a decision is still there, but you no longer need to seek permission. You only need to notify.
So if after this, instead of having to seek permission from the committee, they could just take the decisions anyway, did these managers change what they decided was right because they had the power to take decisions independently? Why would they do that?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And that's sort of at the heart of why we think delegation has effects. And really, the underlying theory behind this is, if I'm a manager and you're the minister, we might have different preferences. And we both know that. So I might care a little bit more about profits than employment. You might care a little bit more about employment than profits, even though we each care about both. So when I bring decisions to you, you see that from the lens of Namrata cares more about profits than employment, but I care more about employment. So this is more about the manager's ability to implement what they thought was the right decision rather than them changing what they were thinking was the right decision.
And also, in your analysis, what really counts as meaningful delegation? Because, of course, not all delegation would lead to any noticeable change in profits or employment, would it?
Absolutely. And so here, the three things that changed were all related to what we think of as long-term strategic changes. So capital expansion, labor restructuring, joint ventures, and subsidiaries. And so these were the three things that the firms could change about the firm itself without the committee. And they seemed to exercise all three rather meaningfully. But those were the three things that changed.
And so now we get to the really difficult bit. How do you use these changes to extract some kind of causal relationship going from managerial autonomy to changes in productivity or profitability or employment?
And so here I do a baseline analysis, and then I kind of analyze it from many different ways to really convince ourselves that what we're looking at here is the impact of autonomy. So the baseline analysis that I do is, remember that these firms could petition for autonomy if they became eligible via this profitability eligibility. And so what I do is I test whether the impact of becoming just eligible for the program changes after the program is announced. And so I do a difference in difference analysis where I take pre-program eligibility as a proxy for getting autonomy. And so what this is saying is, before 1997, if you were an SOE that was already eligible for the program, do you perform differently after the autonomy program is announced? Yeah. And so we wash away the effect of becoming eligible after, we wash away some of the selection into the autonomy, but just saying these firms that were primed when the program was announced, do they do differently? And then I also analyze the impact on these firms relative to the private sector. I analyze the direct effect of the receipt of autonomy by doing a generalized difference in difference. And then all kinds of fun robustness checks that are in the paper to convince ourselves that this is really autonomy that's doing something here.
We'll leave all those robustness checks in the paper. In the interest of time, so what difference did it make?
So what I find is, first, autonomy has a meaningfully large effect on profits, value added, and sales, as well as productivity effects like sales per worker and value added per worker. So we're talking about something along the lines of a 40% increase in value added over 10 years of the program, and about a 58% increase in profits over 10 years of the program. So these are large effects. And when you think about other papers that have found large productivity effects, so say experiments around consulting, we find that they're somewhat within the ballpark of those estimates. Those are shorter term estimates. These accrue over time. So that's the second interesting thing about the results, mm-hmm. is that when we look at the time path of the results, what we see is that these effects are getting larger over time as the investments that get made into the firm start to yield results. So there's large effects of autonomy. These effects accrue over time. And when we think about, well, what parts of the autonomy are these managers really exercising? So they can do capital expansion, labor restructuring, and they can do joint ventures and subsidiaries. What we find is they're doing pretty much all three. So there's large capital expansion in the decade after they get autonomy. There's a much larger propensity, so a 6 to 7 percentage point increase in the propensity that they're engaging in joint ventures and subsidiaries. There's even a large noisy effect on labor that's positive. So it looks like a scale expansion for these firms. And the fear that was initially present when this program was announced, that it'll be used to lay off large amounts of people, does not seem to have been the crux of what happened.
So now, Murata, are they making big, bold, new decisions, or is it a lot of beneficial tweaks?
Yeah, so that is, when we look at the results as they accrue over time, we find they don't just like one day when they get autonomy, just like double their capital. It looks like they start increasing their capital expansion, you know, they start increasing the joint ventures and subsidiaries, and then it increases over time. And so what we find is that, you know, they have these ideas, they're putting them into place, and the effects on profitability look very similar. There's gradual increasing and cumulative over time. And this is also consistent with their borrowing structure. So we see them moving from government borrowing to non-governmental borrowing, but they're not engaging in high risk or very high interest rate borrowing. So it does just look like them expanding the scale of the firm over time.
And from what you say about the firms, the way you describe their decision-making structure, it's hardly an anything-goes environment here. Do we know that if there had been more autonomy or increased amounts of autonomy over time, then they would have got a better result?
We can get some suggestive evidence on this from the program itself. To the extent that the program had different grades of autonomy, and we see some firms getting more levels of autonomy over time. And we see some firms, if they earned a lot of profits when they were first eligible, they directly jumped to a higher grade of autonomy. And so we do find effects that are larger for firms that have more autonomy from the program structure. But I would call this more suggestive evidence that's indicative of more autonomy perhaps being more beneficial.
These are state-owned enterprises. Albeit, given the fact that in India, it sounds from what you're saying, there are a remarkable diversity of state-owned enterprises, can we establish that this has a parallel in the private sector and say that it makes a difference there, or can we apply it to firms outside India based on the data you have?
That's a great question. That's why we do this. And so the effects that I find are consistent with both what we think of the theory of autonomy, which does not necessarily depend on state-owned enterprises, as well as some prior work in the private sector that looks at how, you know, autonomy might be associated with productivity. So I think I'm hopeful that there are similar forces at work that would govern the impact of autonomy. That said, I think there's so much more to do here, including look at how it interacts with incentives. So things like very high levels of managerial turnover might then mitigate the effect of autonomy if they discourage long-term investments into the firm, for example. Or what sort of guardrails should autonomy programs have, such that they both credibly give autonomy, but also prevent high risk-taking behavior that's unproductive. I'm hopeful, but very excited to see lots of other work on this in the future.
Well, it is a really important piece of work. Now, Murata, thank you very much for talking about it today.
Thank you very much.
If you want to read this working paper, it's called The Impacts of Managerial Autonomy on Firm Outcomes. And the most recently updated version of it's February 21. Is that right, Namarat?
Yes, that's correct.
The author you've just heard from her is Namarat Akala. This has been a Vox Dev Talk. The best way to make sure you don't miss an episode is to subscribe on your podcast platform. And our past episodes, as ever, are at voxdev.org.